Okay, so welcome everybody. It's Terry DeMayo. Today is December 21st, 2015. Oh my gosh, it's almost over. And this is the October 2015 Life Coach Training Group, Coach the Coach, Practicum 2, Class 2, and this is Section D, the dynamic, wonderful D's. So we had some questions on the forum. I want to take those first. Meg, you were wondering about turnarounds. It seems like the thought has to be stated in a way that the turnaround is possible. Well,
I suppose
that's true. The best way to do the thought, to frame up the thought, is to use simple English, like you would use speaking English, and like a declarative sentence. That's what works the best with the work. But can you give me an example of something that you were having trouble with?
It was about, you know, the holiday season and feeling sad because of the holiday season being a little empty. And so is it true that the holiday season is a little empty? Yes.
Okay,
but,
wait. Let's just stop right there. All right, we're going to get rid of a little. First of all, we want to make these thoughts as dynamic as possible, because when your client is suffering with this in the middle of the night or on their way home and everybody else is going to a party or whatever is getting them stirred up, they're not thinking a little. They get on the phone with you and they say, yeah, it's just a little. But when it's bothering them, it's a lot. So the first thing we want to do is frame up the thought in its strongest possible iteration. So the holidays make me feel empty.
Yeah.
Would that be a way to frame it up accurately?
Yeah.
Okay. So the opposite is the holidays don't make me feel empty.
Right.
Other, and we're going to have next class only on turnarounds, so you're going to get a lot of expertise there. But the holidays make me feel empty. I make the holidays feel empty. We switch the subject and the object. I take on the behavior that I'm accusing something or someone else of. So I make the holidays feel empty. And then turning it to self, I make myself feel empty.
Okay. That makes perfect sense. Much easier.
Right?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Much, much clearer.
Good. Okay. Now, Nicole, the thought comes back. Yes, it does. Give me an example. And when you guys are asking your questions, it's always easiest if we're working with a concrete example rather than theoretically. So can you give me an example of the thought your client said, I'm still struggling with this?
Sure. This is Nikki. The thought that my client said was that her family's opinion of her is more important than her opinion of her own self.
Okay. Meaning she values their opinion of her.
Yes.
Okay. How old is your client?
She's 25.
Okay. So probably for close to somewhere around 20 years, plus or take a few, she's been harboring under the illusion that what her family thought about her behavior, her opinions, her activities was much more important than her self-guided and self-directed sense of what was good for her. Okay. So as Martha Beck coaches, we're really good, but we're not so good that we're going to undo 20 years of self-abusive thinking with a 20-minute or an hour session. So these thoughts do come back. And here's what I tell my clients. I'm not performing a lobotomy on you. We're doing an exercise to help you loosen your belief in the thought. So when that thought comes back, I'm going to invite you during the week until our next session to remember how when we got, and this is the talk I give them at the end,
yeah.
or this is the thought I give them when the thought comes back. You see, it's your job now to remind yourself that it's not true that your opinion doesn't count. Remember how when we did that exercise, we found that truth, and you felt really good about that. Now, the other, that's one way to handle it. So, yes, the client, the thoughts will come back, especially at first, because in part what we're trying to do is teach the client and give the client a sense that, number one, just because you believe it doesn't mean it's true. And number two, your thinking, not the circumstances, are driving your feelings and your behavior. That's the coaching framework. So we're trying to get them to understand the coaching framework as a way of life. It's not the rain that's making me miserable. It's my belief that the rain limits me that's making me miserable. You see, it's my belief that my family controls my value, not my value, you see. So now, here's another very excellent way to keep chipping.
Okay.
And my family's opinion of me is more important than my opinion of me. That's a mouthful. How did you frame the sentence when you did the work with her? Because that one seems really unwieldy. What's her family think of her?
Her family, I would say her family has generally been pretty positive, but yet they have made most of her life decisions. They are happy for her. So,
right,
you know, I think
because she's following the program.
Yes. The turnaround was my opinion of myself is more valuable than my family's opinion.
Well, yes, I get that. I'm just trying. First of all, I think with a new client, that one is too big a bite.
Okay.
It's too. It's too much. So that will come back. I would pick some discrete area of her life, like my family thinks I should dress like a square. I'm totally making something up on the fly here. Or my family doesn't like my boyfriend. You know, I'd find an area or because if you get into my family is too controlling, it's huge, and it is going to come back. So one suggestion I can make is to take a little chunk of it and try that. You know, just one little area where they're trying to control her, and she's trying to exert some independence. Maybe, you know, they don't like her career. Maybe they don't like her clothing. Yeah. Maybe there's something. Okay. The other thing you can do, now, you know, question three. How do you react when you believe the thought? Well, the reaction to a painful thought will pretty much always open up underlying painful thoughts. Well, when I'm believing the thought that their opinion is the one that counts, then I don't value myself. I get frozen. I'm stuck. I doubt whether my boyfriend is good for me. I doubt whether I'm eating the right meals. And so whatever the client is explaining there in question three becomes the fodder for more thought work.
Okay.
You see? And it's not a limitation of the tool. So is it best to work through another tool? In my opinion, and that's your question. I'm reading your question here for the people. I'm repeating that for the rest of the class who might not be looking at this. She was asking also, is it best to use another tool when the thought comes back? No, you know, the work is really our powerhouse tool. It is really the most powerful thought dissolving tool in our toolkit, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I invite those of you who might think otherwise to get yourself coached in it and give it a fair shot before you write it off. I thought it was pretty goofy when Martha taught it to me. And I, once it changed my life, I began to think otherwise. I use it a lot early on in a client relationship.
Mm.
And then, you know, as the relationship moves forward and they begin to get those areas of their life where their thinking is getting in their way and they start to see the patterns, then we can use the ACT tools, which to me are more shortcut tools. Okay?
Mm. Okay.
Makes sense?
Great, thank you. Yeah, that's
okay. Okay. Any other questions about the work? Or anything you've been doing so far? You can also ask questions about the tools you learned in Practicum 1.
I have a question.
Okay, who's this?
My name's Electra.
Electra, great.
Hi. Just a brief question. I found sometimes a little bit that it was a little, I felt a little, I guess, either jerky, not jerky like I'm a jerk, like the transition felt a little jerky to me going from what's, can you tell me about an area of negativity or something that's bothering you to let's drop into our body. And, you know, I mean, like the work part and then the dropping into the body part, I found it to be hard to transition, I guess. And
okay.
I'm wondering
okay.
if there's a way to make that feel a little more organic, I guess.
Well, there are many ways to do that, and you will find your own best way. But let me make some suggestions. Okay, can I use you for my client right now?
Sure.
Okay, so Electra, and I'm going to use this situation. I'm going to coach you through this situation. So, Electra, you're telling me that what I hear you saying is that this feels a bit disjointed to you when you're coaching, going from finding thoughts to the feeling that the thought creates to using the work. Okay.
Yeah.
So I have a hunch that you think that there's only one way to do this correctly. Tell me where I'm wrong.
I think you're right, partly. And
mm-hmm.
you're right about that. There, it feels like sometimes there's one way. But the way that you're wrong is I think I just feel like a little obvious when I switch. You know what I mean? Like I have to really like think about it in order to make
right.
it doesn't feel like I'm just So I mean you're right in that I don't wanna veer off and find myself somewhere too far down into a place where then there's, you know, people like to talk. I mean, that's a natural reason that this kind of work works because people enjoy being heard. They
mm-hmm.
make them feel good to be acknowledged. And so sometimes you got to pull them back from a sort of
mm-hmm.
a rant on something.
So
and
where are you getting bothered in that pulling back?
I guess from, you know, probably from my own experience, sometimes I allow the rabbit hole to go too far and I feel like I need to pull them and say, okay, so now if, you know, I mean, I feel like the questions have to be asked.
Okay.
I can get
so,
information.
Okay. So stop right there. Your client's in the rabbit hole, How do you feel?
If I was doing what I normally have done in the past, like my own training, I would feel fine. But when I feel like I have to ask a specific question, I start to feel like a little, not anxious, but I feel like I'm like searching, like I'm actively searching, and I've got to like interject.
Okay. Let me ask you, what is your prior training?
I'm a social worker, and my prior training is also as a therapist in New York. Got it.
Okay.
So I worked at a clinic.
Right.
So, you know, more sort of like traditional, I suppose, in a way. No behaviorist or, you know, more sort of Freudian-based.
Okay. So, Electra, I heard a moment ago you say that you believe we're teaching you that you have to ask a specific question. And that, to me, sounds like that's somehow stressful or gets in your way of feeling smooth with what you're doing. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
I feel like I have to find the place to ask the question.
Mm-hmm. You have to find a place and then ask the specific question.
Yeah, because I've got to find the thought. So I'm working on the thought, and then I think, oh, I found the thought, but maybe it's not the right thought. And then I might. So yeah, I just feel like it's a little like a roller coaster. That's like the old roller coaster. You know, suddenly you don't know you're going around a curve.
Got it. Okay, so stop right there. Now, when you believe that you have to find the right thought, how does that feel in your body? Just briefly.
I think it just feels a little mushy somehow.
Okay, I'm not quite sure I understand mushy, but what I want you to do is imagine you're with a client right now.
Foggy, I guess. Mentally
foggy. How does foggy feel in your body?
Maybe a little dull almost, a little, like not excited, but not, you know, disconnected, just sort of a little, like, generally flat almost, like, you know.
Which
in a way is relaxed, actually.
Okay, what I'd like you to do, hang on, before you jump in and answer this time, imagine you're with a client, take a moment, and this is not going smoothly for you.
Mm.
You're a bit awkward with a new tool, and you're believing, I have to find the right thought. Now take a moment before you answer. Drop your attention into your physical body and notice what that thought does. I have to find the right thought.
Makes me feel a little nauseous.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Electra, here's what we're going to do. You remember how I explained to you that it's not the circumstances, but it's the thinking that drives a feeling like nausea? Do you remember when we explained the coaching framework of circumstance driving thought, driving feeling, driving behavior? Okay.
Yeah.
So when you're feeling nauseous, how does the flow go? What happens to your coach? You get stuck.
Yeah.
Right. So you can see how you're coaching. That's our circumstance. The thought comes in, I have to find the right thought. It drives a feeling of nausea. That drives a stuckness in you.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd like to do with you at this point is an exercise called the work, where we're going to look at that thought and find out the truth underlying that thought. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. And then I would just start. So the first question is, I have to find the right thought. Is it true?
No.
So, right. I'm not going to take you all the way through the work at this point, but basically what I did was help you understand how in a live coaching session you would transition from, you know, we identified a few thoughts. I just picked one. Finding the right thought, there's no such thing. That's just another way of putting pressure on yourself. There is no such thing as the right thought. You said, I have to ask a specific question. I have to find the thought. I have to find the right thought. I just grabbed one of them because that one seemed really obvious to me. But any one of them, I thought that that one was the most powerful. And so that might help you get in touch with your body. And I tried to get you there a couple of times, and you were giving me answers like foggy and mushy. And then I slowed you down. I had you drop your attention down into your body, took you into the situation where you imagine you're coaching and this thought comes up, and you dropped your attention into your body, and then you were able to identify the physical sensation of nausea. And then we tied it up to what happens then. You get stuck, you see? And then I said to you, I'd like to do an exercise with you around that thought to see if we can find out the truth of that thought. So does that give you a sense of how to transition through this?
Yes, actually, you know, it does, because allowing for the thought to be the one that you want to grab to be the one makes it a little easier to not have to grab the right one. And also,
yeah, for right now, there is no right. There never is a right one.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just think I put a little pressure on myself to follow it a little more exactly.
You're trying to do it right, which is great. You know, I mean, it's good that you're really trying to get it, and it's good that you're asking questions when it seems a little elusive. Now, you know, and I'm going to read this to the class, too, because I want to speak to this as well. You say, in Katie's work, she wraps it up nicely. What you're seeing with Katie, number one, is a master. Number two, you're seeing something that has been selected to go online. So they're not fumbled. They're going to show you something that does go smoothly. Edited. It's produced. It's made to be watched and made to give the idea that this tool works, how it works when it's flowing really well. But you will notice that when you and I were working a moment ago, I felt that there was more to the sensations, the body reaction, than foggy or mushy or dull. Those didn't seem real specific as far as body sensation. So I stopped you a couple of times, tried to get you to slow down before you answered, directed you to your body, and then you were able to get in touch with that sensation of nausea. And sometimes that's the way it goes. But you won't see that in those more produced examples that you get. Even the example of the work that Susan Grace and I did, you know, we don't want to pretend that we're stumbling, because that would seem even worse than having two experienced coaches work with each other. And we know that it goes smoothly when we do that. But the alternative, you know, it's difficult for us to find, you know, our clients don't want to be recorded. But believe me, when we're working with clients, it doesn't go as smoothly as the recording here. So what you and I just did is more like a real coaching situation where you may have to back up and try wording or slow the client down until you have a sense that they're really there. Now,
I guess that is the thing that I was successful a few times, but I struggled with it because one or two people were, you know, very in their heads, and so they were eager to, you know, go in, and so slowing them down was hard for me.
Well, now you have an example of how to do that, and I would say this: if you try to slow them down a couple of times and you just can't get there, some people are so unused to connecting with their body that it's just going to take several sessions to get them there. So, you know, just let it go and move on like it happens every day. The other thing is when you're doing the work itself, a sub-question that you can always ask to question three, how do you react when you believe the thought, is how does that thought feel in your body? So you can try to bring them in there. If you don't do it before the work, you've got another shot there. Yeah.
A good idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, while we're talking about question three, you guys, let me just talk about sub-questions today. Question three is a broad umbrella as written. How do you react and what happens when you believe the thought that you have to find the right thought? It's a broad umbrella kind of question. We highly recommend that you start there. That's the way the master wrote it. Once you learn these tools really, really well, feel free, and I invite you to experiment, change it up, ask how does it feel when you believe that thought, and start there. But for right now, do it as we're teaching you, and do it as Katie designed it. And then you can come back with one or two or three specific sub-questions. So the first thing is you ask the umbrella question and you listen. What's the client say? How do you react when you believe the thought you have to find the right thought? Well, I get a feeling of nausea in my belly and I feel flat and dull and stuck. Well, to me, that would be a pretty complete answer. I probably wouldn't ask a sub-question about how does it feel in your body, because you've asked the question and the client, you've asked the general question and the client has told you. But you can ask other sub-questions. How do you treat your client in your mind? Or how do you treat your client in your behavior when you believe you have to find the right thought? And by treat, we mean, you know, get sarcastic? Do you get afraid? Do you get hidden? Do you start judging? Do you criticize in your mind? Do you criticize to their face? And with, you know, this particular example with Electra isn't necessarily a good example of, but in a interpersonal dynamic, like a husband and wife, how do you treat your husband when you believe the thought that he was mean to you? Well, you know, I yell at him, I criticize in my mind, I think I never should have married him in the first place. So those are all those questions that go to how you treat. And then how do you treat yourself when you're believing the thought that your husband was mean to you? Well, then I berate myself. I picked the wrong man. I shouldn't be in this marriage. Nobody else would ever love me again. I'm such a loser. He's mean to me because I'm too fat. You know, and on and on and on. But again, you ask the general question, number three, how do you react? You listen to what the client says. Based on what you hear, you can pick and choose some additional sub-questions. Now, in your binders, we give you some recommended sub-questions. If you go to thework.com, there's a facilitation guide with other sub-questions. You can experiment with those, but we at least want you to be familiar with the ones that we suggest, and those are the ones, by and large, we'll practice here. I will tell you this. The work itself, as Katie designs it, is organic and fluid, and that facilitation guide will change. When I went to the school for the work a number of years ago, it was different, and it's changed several times. So there is no, they're not carved in stone by God on a mountainside, like Moses was given the Ten Commandments by God. They are simply suggestions. They work really well. And as the work evolves and Katie evolves her work, you will see that changing. So any questions about sub-questions and how to deal with question number 3? You know, I always like to give you guys the metaphor of an artist. So when people go to art school, they learn the human anatomy through figure drawing. They have naked models that come into art classes, and they sit in poses, and the students draw an actual human sitting before them naked. And these are not necessarily gorgeous people. They're not fashion models. They're old people. They're young people. They're everything in between. They're of all sizes and postures and attractiveness and so forth. So art students learn to draw the human body from life. And then when they get really, and they learn the color wheel, and they learn how to apply color in reality. So when they're painting a bowl of fruit, a banana is shades of yellow and an apple is shades of red. After they get really good at painting and drawing from life, then they get to abstract expressionism. They get to add their own flair to it. And they might put two eyes on the same side of the nose like Picasso did, or change up the colors. And a pear becomes blue, and an apple becomes purple, you see? It's the same with coaching. We want you to learn the very basics, and when you get really good at it, then you'll make it your own. You'll add your own flair. You'll put two eyes on the same side of the nose, metaphorically speaking. But you'll do it very intentionally. You'll either think, this is an experiment, or, aha, this is going to be great. My intuition is guiding me here. But be careful about changing it up right now just because you're a little nervous and you're not really sure of where to go. You can have those questions in front of you. You can have the sub-questions in front of you. It's not cheating to read them, and they're simple enough that you won't sound like a script. And if you practice the tools, all of them, not just the work, but all of them as written, and then begin to change it up with intention, we've found it's the best way to become a really competent, thriving coach. Does that make sense? Good. Thank you. All right. Any more questions before we move forward? Okay. I guess it's time to coach, huh? Awesome. So let's see now. Who hasn't coached that would be willing to? This is your chance to practice. And this kind of practice is actually much more designed to help you learn, because when you practice with each other, you can't catch each other's weaknesses or mistakes. So when you have the opportunity here, I really encourage you. We don't expect you to do it, quote, right. You're not being graded. There's no test at the end here on this. So, and you'll move along very swiftly with volunteers. Yes.
Terry, I'll coach. I coached like a few sessions ago, but I haven't coached on the work at all.
Okay. Who is this?
This is Nikki.
Nikki. Okay. Mm-hmm. Who is willing to be a client? And again, it's a great opportunity, you guys.
I'll be a client if nobody else wants to be a client. I haven't volunteered for anything in a while.
Who is this?
Electra again.
Electra. Awesome. Thank you. Now, what I want you guys to do is really step up. When this duet is done, let's move very swiftly into another duet. In fact, I'd like to identify them right now. Who's going to be our second coach today?
This is Tiffany. I'll do it.
Tiffany, thank you. Okay. Who has not been a client at all?
This is Linda. I haven't been a client yet.
Thank you, Linda. Okay. And we're going to be a client here. I'm just going to mark it. Okay. And by the way, that's the only thing I keep track of is who coaches who and who's the client. Just because we like to spread the love around. I don't, you know, give you guys gold stars or negative marks or anything like that. And none of us do. It's not about that. It's about having an opportunity to practice under supervision. And we just want to make sure everybody's getting an opportunity to do that. Okay. So, and then before the end of class, we're going to talk about the dismount if we don't get to it in these duets, and we're going to talk about the judge your neighbor worksheet. Okay. So what I'm going to recommend that we do is start with the thought. So, Nikki, your job is to get one of the thoughts that Electra has brought with her today and get it framed up well and then guide her right into the work rather than finding a thought. Just, again, we're trying to move with some efficiency here. But that doesn't mean that you need to rush.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So, Electra, we get to chat again. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
Okay.
I had written down originally a few things just in case for different reasons, but paying attention to kind of, you know, something a little new, maybe, and also something not so intense that it, you know, bothers me to the point here. So I guess my area of frustration right now is with something kind of physical. You know, I've been I'm a dancer from not recently, but like in my past, and you know, like in high school and college, I didn't major in it, but I did dance my whole life, and I've been really
Electra.
Like,
wait. Let me just jump in here. What we want, Electra, is just the thought. We're going to start
so
right there.
Thought.
Yes, one of the thoughts you brought.
Okay, I'm feeling frustrated about my physical exercise and activity. I can't stay on track. I try hard to, you know, get into this routine with myself, and it's just like I start it, and then something derails it a little bit, and then it gets derailed, and I'm very annoyed with myself because I feel like my thought is I feel like I really should be able to stay on track here, and I get myself sort of easily derailed and easily discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
I'm easily discouraged with how it goes, and I'm annoyed
okay.
that I can't trick myself to overcome that.
Sure. So
physically.
So is it truly a physical
okay.
thing, or is it a mental thing?
No, it's a physical thing. I mean, it's a thought that I have. I think that that I think it's the thought is I should be good at staying active in
okay.
and doing the things that you that I know that I that make me feel good, that I like.
Mm-hmm.
That help my
okay. I'm gonna.
I'm
sorry. I'm gonna. I've got to jump in here again. Nikki, what is happening is Electra is throwing multiple thoughts out.
Yeah.
And normally, if this was a one-on-one client session, you would just let her go for a bit, and then you'd grab
yeah.
one of these. But because we want to start today with a thought,
mm-hmm.
Electra. Which of these ideas that you have thrown out, I can't stay on track, I get derailed, I should be able to stay on track, I'm easily discouraged,
okay,
I should
so
be good
I
at
get,
staying on
I
track, pick one. Just pick one.
I should be good at staying on track.
There you go.
Okay,
so,
physical activity.
Sure. I should be good at staying on track with my exercise routine.
Yes.
That, okay. All right. I'm just going to write that down. Good with staying on track. Is that true that you should be good at staying on track with your exercise routine?
Yes, it is true.
Okay. Can you absolutely know that it's true you should be good at staying on track with your exercise routine?
No, I can say that the absolute part of that is not true.
Okay.
Or I'd be doing it.
Sure. And when you have the thought that I should be good with staying on track with my exercise routine, how do you react, and what happens when you have that thought?
I think I get mad and I punish myself for that, for not getting on track.
Okay, punish yourself. And sure. And
I get mad. More than the madness is the first part of that.
Okay, so you get mad and punish yourself. Does this prompt you to still get into the exercise or not?
No, it takes me in the other direction.
No. Okay, so you don't get into the exercise, you get mad and you punish yourself. So who would you be if you didn't have this thought, if you weren't able to think, I should stick with that exercise routine, it's good for me? Who would you be if you didn't think that?
I think I would be probably less judgmental. I would be happier physically in a way. I wouldn't feel so pressured.
Okay. Happy, more physical. Perfect. So we know that there would be some really good things that you would feel and think if you didn't think that thought. So let's play with the turnaround. So if our thought is I should be good with staying on track with an exercise routine, if we turn that around on its opposite and we say I'm good without staying on an exercise routine, what would be some examples of how you are perfectly fine without being on an exercise routine?
Okay, now hold on just a second here.
Sure.
It's the thought that she should be good at staying on track. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So first of all, ask the client to find the opposite rather than do that for her.
Okay.
Number one. But you need to keep the languaging specific.
Okay.
And I it went too fast for me to write it down, but the languaging changed just a bit, I'm pretty sure. But
okay.
What I wrote down is I should be good at staying on track with my exercise routine. So the opposite would just change that verb.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll change it. I should not be good at staying on track with my exercise routine.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
and
that's
the
opposite.
What would be examples of not being good?
Examples of not being good. Wow, I could produce many of those. I should not be good at staying on track with my exercise routine. I need some help here. Am I supposed to be thinking of like examples of the of why that would be good, or should I think of examples of what happens when that is the case?
I would say you should think about examples of basically why this would be a good thing for you.
It's why it's true. It's not why
it's
good.
True. Okay.
It's why it's true.
Why it's true
that you shouldn't be good.
Okay, why it's true that I should not be good at staying on track. Okay, why it's true is that I feel like it would stop the cycle of me sort of feeling like the time part of that was not in my control. Like I can control when I do it. I don't have to go to a gym. I don't have to go to a dance class. I could actually say, all right, I don't need to be good. I shouldn't be good at staying on track. I can then do it at 11 o'clock at night when I can't go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll do a tape. And that would be an example of me not being good in the traditional way that I've made it seem.
Sure.
That's one example. Why I should not be good at staying on track. I think that sometimes I shouldn't be good because I confuse, let's say, strength training or stretching with cardio and, you know, whatever. So I'm a little, why I should not be good at staying on track maybe is because I need to clarify for myself what I'm trying to get out of this exercise routine. And I think I haven't really clarified that for myself because I get bored with certain classes. Why I preface this without thought, which is that, you know, just some routines are just like, no, I can't do that.
Yeah.
So that would be a second reason to stop the cycle of judgment and clarify what I really want to get out of it. And then a third example, I don't know, maybe I would make myself more available to do things that were spontaneously fun, like cooking or, you know, being more available for something that just comes up instead of having to force myself to go somewhere specific. Those are three examples.
Perfect. And Terry, I have a question here because when I think about going to the next turnaround and asking Electra what that may be, and if I have a hard time turning this around to the opposite and it's already been turned to the south, could I ask?
No, it's been turned to the opposite.
To the opposite, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So now you have trouble with the other?
I'm thinking of other turnarounds here if I were to ask her. Yeah, so if I ask Electra to kind of continue with this and go to another person around.
Okay. Let me answer. Yeah. Let me answer. Okay.
Okay.
There are three places to look for turnarounds. One is to the opposite, which we do by changing the verb. That's the simple opposite. Okay. I should be good. I shouldn't be good. Okay. The second place is the other. There are several ways to find other. If you've got another person, you can, you know, my mother doesn't love me. I don't love my mother. You switch the people. We don't have two people here. So we look at whether we can switch the subject and the object. So let's play with this. I should be good at staying on track of my exercise routine. My exercise routine should be good at staying on track with me. That's the other. It may or might not work, but but you see, we can. It makes sense to me. I can certainly find that. My exercise routine should be good at staying on track with me. In other words, if I've got a bad shoulder, my exercise routine needs to be staying on track with that shoulder, and I'm not going to try and bench press 250 pounds.
Okay.
You see, you see what I mean? So now, now the best, the best way to do this, Electra or Nikki, I mean, is you ask the client if they can find it, give them a shot at it, and if they can, great. If they can't, then you help them. You either give it to them or coach them a little bit so that they find it. And then let me just finish. The third place to look for the turnaround is to self. I should be good at staying on track with myself. We drop out exercise routine and we put in self all the way through the thought. Now, every turnaround gets three examples of why it's true or truer than the original thought. Okay? There are three places to look, but once you find it, three examples of the truth of it. Okay?
Okay.
And again, next class is going to be all about turnarounds. So if anybody on the call still is feeling a little fuzzy about it, not to worry.
Okay. Okay. Perfect.
Okay.
All right, Electra. Would you like to work with me on creating another turnaround?
Sure. Now I feel like I've gotten like a hint.
Yeah. No, that's perfectly fine. If we turn this to yourself, do you have a turnaround that you feel would be powerful for you?
Okay. Well, since she already said one, that's I'm gonna. I'm going to look at, I might have to look at that one because the I should be good at staying on track with my size becomes, you know, there's already an I in there.
Yeah.
My exercise.
Yeah.
And maybe I can.
So, yeah, the.
You know, if I turn it around to what she said was I should be. I should be good at staying on track with myself. I'm wondering if that could turn into I should be good at directing myself to stay.
We keep the turnaround.
You keep
by
like
changing the language of the original thought. I should be good at staying on track with myself is the turnaround.
Okay.
Now your job, Nikki, Electra, is to find three examples of the truth of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I have to find three examples, Nikki.
I should be good with staying on track with myself.
Okay. Well, three examples of that be I am pretty good at staying on track with myself.
Okay.
In in some ways, you know, I don't sleep in.
Mm-hmm.
I usually write something down, you know, as a sort of a list,
okay.
So I can not forget something that has to happen in the morning,
mm-hmm.
or during the day. Another example would be sometimes going and doing something, exercise. Like I've said to my daughter, I'm going to go to the gym before I don't want to go. Like I'm going to go 5 o'clock because I know dinner is going to be around 6 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go before I run out of energy to actually force myself out the door. And I will do that.
Okay.
Don't like it, but
mm-hmm.
but I will sometimes
so you,
do that.
So you hold yourself accountable by telling other people.
Yeah, I should be getting as big as myself. A third example. These are hard examples actually to come up with.
Yeah.
I guess I'm good at staying on track of myself with regards to children and, you know, things like that have to get done. And I don't waver on that much. You know, I'm pretty good at, like, whatever needs to get done with myself that has to do with what they need to, from me or whatever. That doesn't get ignored. Like, I do stay on that track. So that would be a third example, staying on track with myself.
Sure. So I should be.
And those
good
are true and truer maybe than then I should be good at staying on track with my exercise.
Okay. So I should be good with staying on track of myself because I'm good at keeping habits like not sleeping in and writing things down. Mm-hmm. I hold myself accountable by engaging others, and then I always take care of my children's needs and don't ignore them. So those are reasons why it's true that I should be good at staying on track of myself. Does that feel right for you then to work with this with these two turnarounds and find the why they are true?
You know what, Electra or Nikki, I'm
mm-hmm.
gonna ask you not to ask her that right now. We
okay.
wanna get all the way through the exercise and you've got one more turnaround to do.
Okay, so you definitely want to do 3 turnarounds always?
Well, you don't have to. Are you choosing not to do the third one? And this is your wrap-up?
I guess I...
Because if that's what you're intentionally doing, then that's great. But if you forgot it, then I'm just gently suggesting that you do the third one.
Oh, sure. We can definitely go to that as well. I just wasn't sure if we needed to or not. But, Electra, if we look at the turnarounds that we've done, so we've turned around the thought to its opposite, and we've turned around the thought to itself, can you think about a turnaround that would be turning around this thought to the other, given that the thought is, I should be good with staying on track of my exercise routine, switching those two nouns?
Okay, well, so that's my exercise should be good at staying on track with me.
Yes.
And I have to think of 3 examples of that. That
yes,
is
being true.
Because I'm having trouble thinking of those.
Uh-huh.
It's hard for me to think of exercise as having a will.
You have to take a little poetic license here.
Right.
And remember the example I get about if your shoulder is broken, your exercise routine needs to stay on track with that, you see.
So here's an example. You know, I have a really busy lifestyle right now. And with the addition of this class, it just makes it even busier.
Yeah.
So I feel like my exercise routine should fit into that schedule better. And maybe, you know, so that's one example. My exercise could also catch up with my feeling of perimenopause, which is that I can't do things as I don't recover as quickly as I used to when I do something. So it should give me a break and, like, let me rest for a little bit longer. What else is the third example? You know, I guess my exercise routine and the classes that I could take should be a little more maybe vicinity-wise a little closer. You know, I do not have to travel as far. It should be available in my area where I want to, at times that I want to do it. Does that make sense? Staying on track with me, it could be more accessible itself.
Sure. So
what I need,
you know, read these truths back to you about why it's true that your exercise should be good at staying on track with you. Number one, because you're really busy and your exercise should fit in with your new schedule. Number two, you're going through the perimenopausal symptoms, and this requires your exercise to give you a break and help you work within these, you know, physical constraints. And then number three, your exercise routine needs to be good to you to be closer, more available, and accessible. So these are all reasons why it should be true that your exercise should be good at staying on track with you. So great. So we worked through the three different turnarounds and why they're true. Terry, if you want me to stop there, I'm not sure how to not.
Well, if you'd like to take a shot at what we call the dismount, feel free. You're doing great. If you want me to show you, I can do that. But you're doing so great. Take a shot at it.
All right. Well, I would say, Electra, we worked through your initial thought today of I should be good with staying on track with your exercise routine, and we flipped it around on its opposite, and we talked through examples of where I should not be good with staying on my exercise routine, and you had several really great examples of why that's true, and then we went to turning this thought around on yourself and had the turnaround thought of I should be good with staying on track with myself. And you also had several great examples of why this is true, technically getting into how you've met the needs before of your children, how you've held yourself accountable, and how you're really good at staying on track. And then we had our final turnaround where we turned it around to the other, and we recognize that your exercise should be good at staying on track with me, and several points around how your life has changed and how you have new physical things that your exercise needs to be able to really work with you better. All those turnarounds that we worked on today, does that make you feel better about why your initial thought may not be true and why these thoughts might be truer?
Yeah. Actually, I wouldn't have thought it to be the case, but especially the turnaround, which surprises me, the exercise. Stay on track with me. That actually was a little bit of a revelation to figure out, okay, you know, maybe I'm putting too much pressure on myself and not allowing the reality of what I can do to happen in a way that really works for me instead of what I need to work for it.
Sure. So that you have a lot of great examples of where you've had success in the past and where you really have the opportunity to let your exercise be flexible and enable your success in the future. So, great. Thanks, Alexa.
Okay. So that was handy to have it turned around that way. It made me think of it a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Carrie, I've done the dismount as well as I can. Any feedback?
Whoops. did she get cut off?
Maybe she did. Now, some of these turnarounds I haven't worked with a lot before, especially where you change the two nouns and get kind of poetic, as Terry said, and that's really helpful. I like that.
Yeah, I actually this was a good example. I don't know if anyone else has been having trouble with this, but that the turning it really directly around like that is hard to do, and I think it's good to switch the nouns and.
Yeah. And it's
I would not have thought that would have produced anything, but.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, coming up with something that is almost grammatically nonsensical is helpful because it, you know, allows the mind to kind of not take it as seriously and just, like, try it on. It kind of feels more whimsical. And then, you know, it feels like underneath what's trying to happen is to unstick the thought. You know, Martha talks about the myelin sheaths that get wrapped around a thought that gets, like, so locked into our psyche. And just playing with wordplay, like, with that turnaround in particular, feels like in and of itself helps to unstick the, you know, the gravity of the thought that was previously believed so hard. So even if it ends up not making sense or not really applying, it's almost like, you know, being creative with how to look at it helps.
Yeah. And I have found, I don't know if you guys have been doing this, but as I coach with people, I'm actually, like, writing out the statement, too. So I keep remembering, okay, this is exactly what we're working on. And it allows me to simplify it a little bit more and do the turnarounds more effectively. But I find myself, like I did right off the
The host has joined the conference.
Oh, here's Terry.
Hi, Terry. Hello. Can you guys hear me?
We can now.
I was talking away, and at some point you guys started talking, and I realized you couldn't hear me. I have a clear signal. I'm chatting away. It shows I was connected, but I don't know what happened. Anyway, Nikki, you had asked for some feedback, and then I started giving it to you. But I could hear you guys clear as a bell, and you just kept talking, and I thought that was so awesome. So, Nikki, where I started was to compliment you. I said I thought your coaching, your communication skills are so good. Your instruction, your direction, your leadership, it's clear. It's strong. Your timing is excellent. Very, very good. Now, I have a little bit of feedback for you, and since you asked for it, I'm going to give you some. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Couple of things. We want the work in particular and coaching in general to be a lot about the client and their talking. And you tend to summarize and repeat. Here's what I heard you say, and you repeat back to the client. Particularly with the work, I'm going to invite you to try not to do that because you'll notice in the binder, we want the work to be like a meditation. And especially when you get in deeper with this, the client is going to be really in their process. And when you jump in and you restate what they said, even though you do it beautifully and you do it impeccably, it takes them out of their inner process and into listening.
Okay.
So we want to try and avoid that unless that's necessary. Okay?
Sure.
So that's the biggest thing I noticed. Now, when we got to the dismount, you asked her a leading question. Does that feel better to you now.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
what you're doing there is a leading question means you're giving the client the answer.
Yeah.
You see? And again, mm-hmm. everybody's deepest fear is that we're inadequate. And when we do it for the client, we feed into that whole thing. Just like the example we had at the beginning, I think we were working with Electra, the question at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you know, the client who thought her family's opinion was always,
mm-hmm.
You know, she had a hard time. That's so true with most of our clients. We trust other people's mm-hmm. opinions. So the more we can let clients do for themselves, find the turnaround, not ask leading questions, keep it more open-ended,
yeah.
the more we empower the client. Now, let me give you some examples of how to do the dismount without leading. So, Electra,
sure.
would you play along again here? And let's
sure.
let me model for you a different way. Okay.
Yes, sure.
So you remember how Nikki took you through and you found several turnarounds?
Yes.
Did one or more of those turnarounds seem more powerful to you than the original thought?
Ooh, hang on a second. Okay, I didn't somehow dropped out. What, can you repeat that question?
Yeah, did any of those turnarounds stand out for you?
Yeah, the one where we turned it around to the exercise should... yeah, I didn't write that down.
Should stay on track with you. My exercise
yeah,
should
that
be
one,
good at staying on track kind of, with me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That one kind of
okay.
surprised me that it
okay.
resonated with me.
Okay, so Electra, how could you take that forward with you into your life and live that truth? What could you change up in your life to bring that awareness?
I could give myself a break for always having to be the driver of stuff in every
mm-hmm.
piece of my life and let some of that come to me as a, you know, a spontaneous thing that might be more enjoyable, like that might
mm-hmm.
let me say, oh, there's a there's a class that's near my house, maybe I'll do that, instead
mm-hmm.
of I have to go down to Sherman Oaks to, you know.
Go to a class closer to your house.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'll give you a better example. You know, I have a friend who really likes
Here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to find two or three specific things you can do in your life that would allow you to live the truth of letting your exercise routine be good at staying on track with you. What are two or three actual specific things you could do?
Well, I could say no to the things that I don't want to do.
Uh-huh.
I could allow myself
And what would those
to say
be?
No.
Name a couple
no.
of things you don't want to do that you'll
say. I don't want to go on a hike at 5 o'clock in the morning because it's freezing.
Okay.
And everybody seems to like to hike around here all the time. What else could I do? I don't know. It's a little bit. It feels like a little hard to, because exercise routines or the exercise is kind of an inanimate object in a way. So,
mm-hmm.
but there are opportunities that come, and I don't always take them. Like a friend of
okay.
mine is a Pilates teacher, and she gave me classes for my birthday, and I originally was like, well, ugh. I don't know if I can do that. And then I said, okay, I'm going to, because she gave them to me. And it turned out it was really great. Like, I actually really
mm-hmm.
liked it. And
okay.
So I might have really sabotaged that or not done it before, but that's an example of me. And that's really close to my house.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so staying close to home, avoiding unpleasant things like freezing cold hikes at 5 a.m. That's good. That's it. Congratulations. Give those things a try. Now, if you were my client, I would say, and then in our next appointment, we'll see how that worked.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Does it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Now, that's one way you can do it. Invite the client to live the turnaround. Here's another way you can go about a dismount, and this is the way that I actually do a lot of the time. I will say, Electra, and pretend we just didn't do that, okay?
Okay.
Electra, as we went through that exercise, as you went through that exercise with Nikki, did you discover anything you weren't aware of before?
Yeah, I discovered that I actually can be a little less rigid about how I view my exercise routine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so there, Electra got back pretty much to the same place as the living the turnaround way to do it. And from there, I would coach her to find a couple of specific places she could be less rigid. So that's my magic question. Did you discover anything that you weren't aware of before? And then see if it lends itself to some specific behavior. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But that's a nice way, a couple of nice ways of dismounting from the work without just letting it drop.
Mm.
Does that help, Nikki?
Yeah, that helps a lot. That does.
And I want to tell you, for not having any example of it for you, you did a great job at winging it there.
Thanks.
Yeah, you really, really did. So what I would say for you is to less summarizing and more drawing the client out so that they get that feeling of adequacy and self-efficacy.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, you did a beautiful, beautiful job. Just
great.
Wonderful. So keep up the good work, and you're in good shape on that. Okay?
Great, thanks.
Okay. Now, we're not going to have time, obviously, for the other duet. We've talked about the dismount. The other thing that I wanted to talk to you about today is the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. The Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, we were going to get it in the binder. I'm traveling this week, so I'm not sure it's in your binder. Does anyone know off the top of their head if it's in the binder?
I haven't seen it in the binder.
Okay.
It is available on PDF for download and print.
For downloading, where is it, on the work?
No, it's actually on our coursework. It was one of the things available
for. Oh, it is there.
Yeah. It just wasn't in the, physical binder.
Oh, okay. But it is, okay, I do want you guys to have it. Let me explain what it is, and you're going to bring it to class all filled out next week. This is not a thought-dissolving tool. It's a thought-finding tool. So when somebody is having a problem with another person in their life, their husband, their teenager, their next-door neighbor, their boss, their coworker, their sister-in-law, have them fill that out, or you can fill it out with them. And this is the opportunity. This is a private thing. So if you're working with somebody who has an intimate partner living with them, they do not want to leave this sitting around. And that has happened, where somebody fills this out, what a jerk their husband is, and then leave it where the husband can find it. It's not intended for anybody's eyes, except for you and your client, and make sure the client understands that. This is your private place to get it off your chest.
and you fill out those questions, the things the client that needs to do, the other person needs to do, so you can feel okay. This is not a place to be wise. It's not a place to be politically correct. It's not a place to be evolved. It's a place to be judgmental, petty, small-minded, immature, undeveloped. And I tell my clients like that, and they always laugh because we're all judgmental. You know, we want to do better than that. But the truth is we all have our moments, right? Is there anybody on the call who has evolved to that enlightened place where they don't judge other people? No, I didn't think so. So far, I haven't met anybody in that exalted state. Okay. Fill it out, and then you will see that there are places to frame up thoughts. And next week, we're going to frame up thoughts. We're going to play with turnarounds, and everybody is going to participate. So come prepared to jump in and talk. It's a round robin we're going to do. It's a really fun, easy class. So don't get real worked up about I've got a coach. If we move through it efficiently and we have time for a coaching duet, next on deck is going to be Tiffany coaching Linda. And thank you for volunteering today. I'm sorry we didn't have time to get to you. I just want to look at my notes here and make sure you check your binders, of course, for your homework. And you can always get other resources at www.thework.com. I invite you to take a look there. Inquiry Power Hour. I mentioned on the forum, I'm going to mention it here in class. It is a free, twice-weekly call that a number of Martha Beck coaches and Susan Grace and I, she's another instructor, and I that teach the work. We are both volunteers on the Inquiry Power Hour team. I'm looking to see if I'm doing Inquiry Power Hour anytime soon. No, I'll be doing it again sometime in January, but I don't have the dates yet. I might know by next week, but it's a whole team. There's 9 or 10 of us on that team. We're all trained as both Martha Beck coaches as well as having attended a 9-day school. So you can go there with your questions. You don't have to register in advance. The dial-in instructions are on your forum under a thread that Jackie Gartman started, and you can volunteer to be facilitated. We do the facilitation and take you into the work more deeply. Sometimes we'll spend a half an hour or 40 minutes with a client, and we use that one tool. So you can learn a lot about this tool there. And if you're having any doubts about it, that's a good place to go. And another thing you can do is if you don't like this tool, you can do a judge your neighbor on the work and bring that with you next week. I usually get somebody that's judgmental about the work, doesn't like it, thinks it's stupid, thinks it's intrusive, thinks it's too structured. And so that's a good place to do that. Now, you will notice, too, and this is the last thing I'm going to say today, the work is a structured tool. There is a 4 questions. There are 3 places to look for turnarounds. Every turnaround gets 3 examples. It is a formal structure, but within that structure is a lot of art and a lot of places to make space for clients and to invite them in. So I know for some of us who don't particularly like structure, it seems rigid and formulaic, and I would just invite you to give it a chance. And if you still don't like it, fill out a judge your neighbor worksheet about it
and bring it with you next time, and we'll take a look at some of that. Any questions before we close up?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, this is Laurel.
Laurel.
I have a question, a quick one about the Judge Your Neighbor worksheet.
Okay.
So when I started to fill it out, I statements came up in addition to working with the other. So when those happen, should I just set those aside, or can I work with them with
Give me an example.
Like, I am angry with myself because I didn't see it coming, something like that.
Oh, no. No, no, no. This is to judge the other person. So who was involved in I didn't see it coming?
Okay, got it. So,
somebody betrayed you or let you down.
Yeah.
You let them have it. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Good question. Anyone else? Okay, you guys.
Do we meet in 2 weeks? Isn't that right?
In 2 weeks. Let me see. If I said next week, I certainly sound corrected. Stand corrected. We meet again. Anybody know? Let's see. October. OCT.
January 11th.
It'll be three weeks.
I've got January 18th here. I've got it in my calendar, January 18th.
I think we have a Martha Beck call on the.
You have other classes. You have other classes, but your next class with me is January 18th. So I can look quickly here when your next class is. Is that what somebody is wanting to know?
My impression was that it was January 11th, and we were off for 2 weeks.
That's true. We're off for 2 weeks.
Yeah, no class December 28th, no class January 4th.
And then January 11th,
you're going to have spirituality and inspiration. And then January 18th, we'll be back together. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
And Nikki and Electra, thank you guys so much for today.
Sure. Thank you.
You guys did an awesome job. Yeah. So, okay. I'll see you guys next year. Thanks for being here.
Bye.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Have a good holidays.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Bye.